This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Number two, the Vegas Knights. Alex Pietrangelo goes into the mix, but watch young forwards Cody Glass, Nicholas Roy, and Alex Tuck continue to get better. Two goalies, Robin Lehner and Marc-Andre Fleury, they might need both.
That's TSN hockey analyst Dave Poulin giving his favorites for the upcoming NHL season. Whenever that begins, he thinks the Vegas Golden Knights are the second best team in the NHL, trailing only behind the Colorado Avalanche for next season. Welcome back. Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. In case you're just joining us and haven't been paying attention to the news, it is now official. The networks have all called that it is going to be President-elect Joe Biden. He will be elected the 46th President of the United States of America. Our long national nightmare of watching these votes being counted in excruciating fashion is now over, and we can all focus again on hockey and college football, which gets underway in about 22 minutes' time. So nice of them to coordinate that
So what does John King do now? Does he just, like, shut off the magic board, or does he keep going? Like, are there other things that he can do on the magic board?
Well, there's going to be elections, midterm elections,
right,
coming up in about 2 years' time, so I think maybe he takes a week or two off, and then he gets ready for that,
right,
where he starts, you know, practicing his zooming finger so he can get that board.
I got to tell you,
you're
more into the American politics. You and Dave are. I mean, I'm not a politics guy. But, yeah, no, absolutely. But, I mean, everybody's been paying attention to this, guys, when you see how close, you know, these states like Arizona and Pennsylvania have been, right? But, I mean, I could watch him. I just think it's really interesting from a, like, I know Dave appreciates this too, like, from a geographic perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if any of the networks here in Canada, obviously TSN is the one that we care about, and TSN is not in the politics business, but, you know, it'd be interesting to see some of this in our Canadian politics. But it's just interesting to see, you know, how he breaks down states and how they vote and everything like that. But obviously, you know, we have a new president, so that's exciting.
That is a good way, a very diplomatic way of putting it there, Mr. Ginsburg. Let's get focused on the off-season review when it comes to the Pacific Division. We did this last week with the Central Division, where we're not necessarily going to go team by team, but we're going to slot the Pacific Division teams into a number of different categories. And the first category I have is the most improved team in the Pacific Division. So, Ezzy, from your perspective, you know, of the teams in the Pacific, given the off-season moves that have occurred, the signings, the trades, the departures, the acquisitions, who is the most improved team in the Pacific Division entering next season?
Yeah, I can tell you it's not the San Jose Sharks.
We haven't got the least. Actually, there's way more candidates for least improved teams.
And I know, you know, a little bit later in this segment or later in the show, I mean, I texted Drew earlier this week about Dom Luchishin's article in The Athletic. Dom obviously does great work. We've never had him on the show, I don't think. Maybe we will eventually, but he does great work, and he actually ranked the Sharks last in terms of, you know, their salary cap situation.
Management,
yeah, right? So, I mean, obviously they've got some bad contracts there. Even though Marc-Edward Vlasic's had a nice NHL career, that contract's not looking too good right now. But this segment is not about the contracts. It's about who's improved the most. And, I mean, I think it's easy to look at Vegas and see Alex Pietrangelo. He was obviously, you know, the big fish, right? Him and Taylor Hall guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have to move out Nate Schmidt and Paul Stastny to get Alex Pietrangelo. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think Vegas improved. I think when you get a top 10, maybe even top 5 defenseman, you know, you've definitely improved. So I would put Vegas there. But, you know, I think if it wasn't for the goaltending in Edmonton,
mm-hmm,
I really would put Edmonton, you know, as one of the teams that I feel has improved. And part of that is, you know, bringing in a guy like Kyle Turris. But, you know, bringing back Jesse Puljujarvi, I still think, I'll talk about it again, I still think Jesse Puljujarvi is a guy that they managed to convince to come back, because we thought that, you know, he either would stay overseas or maybe the Oilers would trade him. So, you know, I really like those moves. And Tyson Barry, to me, was also a move. You know, he was signed to only 1 year, right?
Mm-hmm. And $4 million.
$4 million to me. And, you know, that was a, you know, a pay decrease for Tyson Barry from Toronto. So Tyson Barry, Kyle Turris, these guys aren't being asked to be like number one defenseman, number one or number two centers. Like, Kyle Turris is a third liner at this point in his NHL career, but that's what they needed. So I like the moves that the Oilers have made. So I'll put them in there. And, you know, I'll let Dave get in here, because obviously, you know, we're only talking about a few teams, because, you know, when you talk about the Arizona Coyotes and you know, teams like the LA Kings and San Jose Sharks, they obviously didn't make very many moves. But, you know, I think Vancouver is a team that I would have to say, you know, took a step back. And Calgary, even though they lost TJ Brody. You guys know I have a big man crush for TJ Brody, yep. And I love that move, you know, by the Toronto Maple Leafs, because I think he's a very underrated defenseman. By getting Jacob Markstrom, even though you lose Brody, and, you know, it looks like Hamonic is not going to come back, and you've got some question marks up front, Dave, because we know, you know, the Flames are a little bit top-heavy when it comes to their forward group, even though guys like, you know, Dylan Dubé and Andrew Mangiapane have provided some nice secondary scoring. By getting Jake Markstrom, you're getting a top five goalie in the NHL. And Calgary's issue has been, you know, with David Rittich and Cam Talbot, good goalies,
yeah,
but those aren't, you know, upper echelon goalies. So that one move alone, bringing in Jacob Markstrom, I really like. So for me, it's Calgary, it's Edmonton and Vegas as the teams that have improved the most.
Dave, you can go with least improved or you can go with most improved, whatever.
Well, I mean,
you,
as he kind of hit, as he hit up most of the major points, I think, you know, Kevin Woodley, who we have on from out in BC, he talks about, you know, the goaltending and what his access, I mean, he has access to the non-public numbers, mm-hmm. and he just said what an impact Jacob Markstrom, yep, had on Vancouver Canucks. And so to me, Calgary's biggest question mark, I think, has been goaltending for some time. Since Mika Kiprusoff days,
yeah,
you've now got a goaltender, and I think what they gave him a 6-year deal in Calgary with Markstrom, right? It was 6 years?
Yeah, I believe it was, yeah, six by six, if I'm not,
yeah,
mistaken.
So the point is that you've solidified an area of concern for the Calgary Flames. Now, as he's right, they did lose some of their defense, which, you know, they had a pretty solid defense.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a concern in Calgary, no question about it. But they have some talented forwards as well. So I like the moves that Calgary made. And I agree with Ezzy. If it wasn't for the goaltending at Edmonton,
yep,
I'd like what they did as well. And obviously, Vegas, to improve, you had to take some hits. Now, maybe Paul Stastny wasn't doing it for them the way they needed him to do it. But, you know, you had to lose, you know, Nate Schmidt, that, yep, was kind of a giveaway. And that, you know, Nate Schmidt's a pretty good defenseman. So, you know, I would probably put Vegas in the top, but I mean, and it, when you look at the worst teams, I mean, what did San Jose, LA, Anaheim really do?
Well, and Arizona got worse also.
Arizona,
I mean, that's the worst division in hockey by a country mile.
No, I agree. And I, you know, I've always been a big Devan Dubnyk fan, like, you know, from Saskatchewan nearby here. And, you know, I really felt bad for him with everything that was going on with his family last year. Like, I didn't think he was maybe, you know, by either, you know, the fans, media, was given a fair shake in terms of, you know, when stuff is going on in your personal life, it affects your professional career. And obviously, you know, these guys get paid millions of dollars, but I really do think you have to factor this. At the end of the day, hockey players are just human beings, right? Like, these are, just because they make millions of dollars, I realize they're held to a different standard, but all I'm saying is Devan Dubnyk not too long ago was a Vezina finalist, mm-hmm, and I think Devan Dubnyk is a good goalie, and he's going to make San Jose better, but I still don't think that you can say that that's above average. To have Martin Jones and Devan Dubnyk, I still think you're below average in goal. And then, yeah, you bring in Ryan Donato. I think they gave up a fifth-round pick. Ryan Donato is a good guy that can probably play, you know, I'm not sure if he's going to be a left-winger or right-winger. I think they've talked about him being a right-winger in San Jose. So a guy like Donato, second or third-line guy, he can probably give you 10 to 15 goals. But, like, in San Jose, you're older. Like Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson, you're giving a combined, what, $20 million? And you've got a good young group there up front, right? Like Timo Meier, Tomáš Hertl. I've always liked Hertl, Drew, you know that. Like, they've got a good team, but when you look at, like, the upper echelon teams in the West, like Colorado and Vegas and other teams, they're not even close to those teams.
To me, the most perplexing team in the Pacific Division is the Oilers. I mean, the Oilers have Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl.
Yep.
Everybody in the NHL knew what your problem was going into this coming season.
Yep.
It was on the back end, and you can either say they addressed it or they, you know, or you even want a little bit more besides Tyson Barrie. But, you know, Barrie at the very least is certainly going to lead you offensively.
And he replaces Oscar Klefbom,
who's injured,
but right?
To not address the goaltending situation is malpractice by Ken Holland. It just is. You have to resolve the goaltending situation,
right,
because everybody in the NHL knew that is your problem. That is what's preventing you from getting over the, you know, you can get into the playoffs with the duo that you have, but you can't go beyond that.
Well,
you can't, you're not, yeah, going to, maybe you sneak in and you win one round with the combination of Smith and
Koskinen.
Koskinen, thank you.
Right. And Mike Smith has had a great NHL career.
Yeah,
no doubt. But, you know, he's 39 years old, and you're not expecting, you know, more than a backup role out of Mike Smith. Like, you can't expect Mike Smith to play 60 to 70% of your games.
No.
I mean, especially in a condensed schedule.
Well, that's right, Dave. And I agree with you in the sense that, you know, this was a year where it was such a saturated goalie market, where Ottawa went out and they acquired Matt Murray, and the New Jersey Devils signed Corey Crawford. Like, Corey Crawford made a lot of sense in Edmonton. Even a guy like Braden Holtby made a lot of sense in Edmonton.
Anybody but the duo that failed last year made more sense.
Right, and the point that we're making here is that there were a lot of veteran NHL goalies that you could have signed as opposed to bringing back Mike Smith. Koskinen's under contract for a couple of more years, mm-hmm. I think, right? Two or three more years. So you knew that they were keeping Koskinen, but you could have got, a guy like Braden Holtby for, $4 million a year? Instead, Vancouver beat you to the punch, but I agree. I think that, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying here that Edmonton's a Stanley Cup contender. I'm just saying that I like the moves that they made. Even a guy, Dominic Cahoon, was the other guy that they signed. He's a guy that can provide you good secondary offense.
The only issue with Edmonton is they just don't have any money. They have no cap space.
Right. Whoa, now they
and
don't.
So, but Mike Smith they got for, that's, you have to factor that in because Mike Smith signed for $1.5 million.
Right.
So, but you're not getting Holtby for $4 million. That's the problem. So I agree with Ezzy. I thought Holtby would have been a good fix. He's from, Holtby's from Saskatchewan, isn't he?
Yes, I believe.
Yeah, he's from, but it's where is he? It's west of Saskatchewan. He's right near the Alberta border, I think. But anyways, the point I'm making
is find a way to make it work with.
Sure.
You buy out Koskinen. You do whatever you have to do to get a better option.
But the issue is though. Obviously, Holtby coming off of a down season, is he going to be that solution for you?
Corey Crawford,
he's better than Mike Smith.
No, I agree with
you. That's the point we're trying to make here. Obviously, Holtby is not 100%. The Holtby that he was 5 years ago.
No, I agree.
Right? But I think that's why Jesse Puljujarvi, again, if you've listened to the show the last few months, I've mentioned Puljujarvi so many times because to get a guy, a former fourth overall pick, and I think his contract was just over $1.2 million, I think it was around, to get a guy like that back for such a low cost, and he's a guy that can for sure plug into your top six.
I like every move the Oilers made, just because of the value of it and the potential of it, except for their biggest glaring weakness, the goaltending position, which continues to be the anchor that's going to hold back this team's
and
success.
Look, Drew, they're going to win a lot of games, 4-3, 5-4. They're going to score a lot of goals, but they're also going to lose some games 4-3, 5-4.
You can't do that in the playoffs, and that's where the biggest problem is for the Oilers, and that's why they're my most perplexing Pacific Division team. When we come back, the Dallas Stars are injury-riddled. Ben Bishop, Tyler Seguin out for 5 months. What impact is that going to have on the Stars entering next season? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
The Dallas Stars announced that Tyler Seguin will be out 5 months after having hip surgery yesterday. Seguin was playing with a torn labrum in his hip and a lingering knee injury in the playoffs, where he registered just 13 points in 26 games, scoring only twice. If the timeline holds, the earliest Seguin would be able to return is the beginning of April. And there's more, for Ben Bishop will also be out 5 months after having right knee surgery back in October.
A bad week for the Dallas Stars on the injury front. Tyler Seguin out 5 months. Ben Bishop out 5 months. I guess the silver lining is we have no idea when the NHL season is going to begin.
The NHL season is starting
in 5 months.
Exactly. So that might be the only silver lining as it comes to those Dallas Stars injuries, which we'll discuss this segment. But first, let's check out the Odds Shark inbox presented by Odds Shark, your source for the latest odds from leading authorities. Find your edge at oddshark.net. We were asking people throughout the show, we still want to hear, what should the Winnipeg Jets, in honor of the presidential election, which is now quickly coming to an end, Joe Biden declared is going to be the president-elect. That's by all the major networks, the AP, CNN, NBC, ABC, etc., etc. They've declared Joe Biden as president-elect. What should the Winnipeg Jets' political slogan be for next season? Comments coming in via Twitter and on text. Plungerhead, our good friend, says the Jets' slogan should be fuel up and fly, which I guess it is sort of catchy, so I appreciate that comment coming in from Plungerhead. All the comments coming in via text and via Twitter in response to the Ben Hankinson audio that we played earlier this hour. Greg Burnett, his takeaway is that Buff knew his ankle needed work and didn't address it when it should have been addressed, that being late spring or summer. Certainly sounds that way, that the surgery that he should have had or that he could have had, he decided not to have, and as a result, it led to the eventual divorce between the Jets organization and Dustin Byfuglien. Want to hear from you. More comments, keep them coming via Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can keep them coming via text message. Send your texts to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. Facebook and Instagram posts, your texts, your tweets, we find them in the Odd Shark inbox. And remember, oddshark.net is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Find your edge at oddshark.net.
So is Trump actually golfing right now?
That is, according to the pool report, is that in a perfect... It's just the perfect synopsis to his entire presidency. He is golfing when it was announced that he was no longer going to be president January.
Do you think he knew that before he teed off, or do you think someone, like, who's going to be the person that has to go up? Like, is it Rudy Giuliani?
Mr. President, I've got something to tell you.
It's like, you're a cheater at golf, and you're no longer president. So a double whammy for old DJT there. Let's talk about the Dallas Stars and their injury troubles. Sagan and Bishop out 5 months. Obviously, it makes the re-signing of Anton Khudobin way more impactful. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for a Dallas Stars team that got all the way to the Stanley Cup final, I think this is a significant blow. You know, no matter when the next season of the NHL starts, I mean, to not have Sagan and to have to solely rely on Anton Khudobin, who, you know, certainly was magical in the playoffs, but I'd be surprised if he can keep it up to that same extent in the regular season.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you talk about the Stars, I mean, it was obviously an unlikely run.
What? Unlikely? Some of us had it.
Yes, Dave did predict it. Thank you, Dave, for reminding us of that yet again.
You know, Dave, let's give Dave the credit, though. I mean, Dave did correctly pick the Stanley Cup final and the winner. But, you know, when you talk about, you know, facing Colorado and the injuries that they had and, you know, going up against a stacked Vegas team, you know, good for Dallas. And I'm not taking anything away from Dallas because we talked about Rick Bowness, you know, gets his 2-year deal. Rick Bowness did, and his coaching staff did an excellent job with that Stars team. Anton Khudobin gets some credit there. But, you know, the rest of this Dallas Stars team, it's a very good team. And it's possible that, you know, they were underrated in the Central Division. So, Drew, obviously they're going to miss Tyler Seguin and they're going to miss Ben Bishop because, you know, Bishop, even though Khudobin was re-signed, he's still your number one goalie. Mm-hmm. And Seguin is still one of your top offensive players. And yes, he only scored a couple of goals in the playoffs and he went through a big drought there, you know, while he wasn't producing at all. But, you know, this is a team that I think what we saw is some of the younger players that we thought might develop a little bit slower developed quicker, Dave, right?
Yeah.
So you're talking about, you know, the Denis Gurianovs. You're talking about the Rupe Hintzes. Mm-hmm. Rupe Hintz still hasn't signed yet, by the way. He's a pending RFA. So they'll get him under contract, but Rupe Hintz is a really good player.
Yep.
There's no question, but Dave, does this change your ceiling for the Dallas Stars entering next season? I mean, defending Western Conference champions, albeit in the strange year that it was, does this change the ceiling for the Stars entering next season?
Well, I mean, like, to me, when you looked at Dallas anyways, they were always going to be behind the Colorados, the St. Louis, well, you know, even Winnipeg potentially. I thought they'd be in contention, but again, there's so much unknown about next season that it makes it so difficult to predict, right? Because we don't know what is this going to look like. I mean, Dallas is an older team, and is this going to be a condensed schedule? How will they be able to handle that? Will it be more difficult, or is because they're more a more mature team, they know what to go? A lot of their players have already gone through, you know, a lockout shortened season, so they kind of know what to expect. They know how to treat their bodies. They know how to rebound properly versus guys who are maybe, you know, younger, teams that are younger, haven't experienced that, don't know what that's like. So, to me, there's so many questions. I think you can't take a player like Tyler Seguin off your lineup and not have an impact. I don't think you can have, you know, we're going to see next year, you know, and it's going to be applicable here in Winnipeg. I don't think Connor Hellebuyck is going to get as many starts because of the condensed schedule as he would traditionally. So I think from a Dallas perspective, when you lose Ben Bishop, you know, that's a big loss. And 5 months, guys, I mean, what does that take us to? April?
Well, assuming, March? Dave, that the season starts in mid-January, that's kind of, you know, what we're thinking, even though the NHL wants to start in early January,
right.
We're kind of thinking, you know, mid-January to early February. Then, you know, Sagan, you take 2.5 months off of that, so he's still going to miss a couple of months. So that's probably half of the condensed schedule, right? Or more than half. So that's significant.
And where is your team at that point when they come back?
And you know, speaking of teams that didn't really do much in the offseason, Dallas, I think, you know, with the exception of, you know, one or two players.
Well, they got Julius Honka back.
Yeah, they get Honka back, which is sort of, you know, under the radar.
Yeah, that's
because that's a guy that, you know, I'm surprised that they were able to mend fences there because, you know, it was a lot of, you know, a poisonous commentary and everything. And people were thinking the Jets should be interested in Honka.
Honka's a former first-round pick, and he's got good size, and he can move the puck. I don't think he's more than maybe a third-pairing defenseman on Dallas, like maybe even a seventh defenseman. I mean, guys with Heiskanen and Klingberg,
Lindell.
You know, Esa Lindell, Oleksiak had a good playoffs. So, I mean, I don't expect Julius Honka to be a top-four defenseman for Dallas, but, yeah, it's significant. But the point I was trying to make was that, for the most part, it's the exact same team as the team that went all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. So you wonder, you know, if, you know, Sagan's placed on LTIR, you wonder if maybe Dallas, you know, brings someone else out there. You've got guys like, you know, Mikael Granlund out there. I don't know necessarily if Mike Hoffman's a fit, but you wonder, you know, if Dallas does bring someone in to kind of bridge that gap from the start of the season to when Sagan comes back.
When we come back, Mitch Love, head coach of the Saskatoon Blades and assistant coach for Team Canada at the upcoming World Junior Hockey Championships, is going to join us. We'll talk about the World Juniors, talk about the upcoming evaluation camp. Hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show up next on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio, studio being Dave's living room, but you can reach us here via text message. Send your text to 129090. Our IC question of the day is, what should the Winnipeg Jets election slogan be for the upcoming 2021 season, in honor, of course, of the U.S. election? And if you're just joining us, Joe Biden elected president-elect, officially announced president-elect by all the major networks. He will be, in January, inaugurated as the 46th president of the United States. Of course, you're listening for Jets Talk. That's available on our website, illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are about 7 or so weeks away from the World Junior Hockey Championships, and we're pleased to be joined by Mitch Love. You know Mitch, of course, as the head coach of the Saskatoon Blades. He's also going to be an assistant coach for Team Canada again, as he was last year. Mitch, appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again this morning, guys. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
It's always our pleasure, Mitch, and of course it's sort of going to be an unprecedented World Junior Hockey Championships in that junior hockey for, you know, much of the country has not yet begun, especially here in Western Canada. The Western Hockey League going to begin after the World Juniors wrap up. You know, how much extra complexity does that add to your job as an assistant coach, as you're trying to evaluate all these players and as you're trying to put together the best team to hit the ice in Alberta in about 6-7 weeks time?
Well, you know what, as a staff, we've been really busy this summer. Really, the preparation for this event started in April, quite quickly after the CHL got canceled due to the pandemic, and that process was video oriented, obviously. Through watching games across the CHL of different players, and we had our management staff at Hockey Canada along with the coaching staff really diving into that. The one interesting part that probably people don't understand is this coaching staff that Hockey Canada assembled is had different events with this age group of player, whether it's the Hlinka program or the World Juniors itself from last year. So, you know, we're quite familiar with the 2001, 2002, and of course there's some O3s there and whatnot that'll be competing for spots here in a couple weeks in Red Deer. But I think that will become something that'll be, I wouldn't say an advantage, because most of these kids haven't played a competitive hockey game in 8 or 9 months. But it definitely has a bit of an easier feel when we get together and we really start to push towards, the competition starting on the 26th of December.
You know, Mitch, it was announced a couple of weeks ago that the Chicago Blackhawks were going to loan Kirby Dach to Hockey Canada for the World Juniors coming up in Edmonton. Of course, you coached him with the Saskatoon Blades. We've had you on before to talk to you about Kirby Dach. How nice is that for you to be reunited with Kirby? And also, how nice was it, you know, to see his season in Chicago? And how much pride did you take, you know, in the steps that he took, you know, in his first NHL season?
Well, I mean, we're extremely proud of Kirby and his development path to this point. Would I have loved to see him in a Saskatoon Blades jersey last season? Absolutely. Our fans would, a lot of people would in this community. But, you know, at the end of the day, the Western Hockey League is all about developing these young men for, life outside of hockey and professional hockey. And obviously, he put himself at the highest level last year as an 18-year-old. So that's a huge credit to him. It was really, really fun to watch him play. When the NHL came back in the bubble setting in Edmonton, he was one of Chicago's, best contributors, in my opinion, and watching him play the game, was given heavy minutes, which just means that he was trusted by the coaching staff there in Chicago. So, when we got the news that he was joining us for our selection camp next week in Red Deer and with the hopes that we'll have him right through the tournament, we're really excited. And then obviously my connection with him here in Saskatoon a couple of years ago, I'm really looking forward to working with him again. He's a mature kid. He's come a long ways, even in 1 year, and rightfully so, playing for that organization with some of the leaders they have in Chicago. And I'm just really excited to get going with him and the rest of the crew that'll be in Red Deer.
Mitch, speaking of your Saskatoon Blades, you have to go back to March 16th to the last time you guys played, and obviously now the WHL has January 8th penciled as the start date. So from your perspective, from a coaching staff's perspective, obviously we know 2020 has been unprecedented, but what's it been like trying to get your staff ready for the upcoming season?
I just recently finished my 2-week quarantine here back in Saskatoon, so I'm back in the office here today, and I obviously, with today's world, you get used to using the Zoom, and I've had a lot of time to really get together with our staff. We've gone through a few changes here. We've added a new video coach. We've added a new assistant coach here in the last couple weeks, so it's been busy. But I feel, we're in a good place as a staff, as an organization, headed into training camp on December 27th here in Saskatoon. I've got a great staff, very, very trustworthy crew, and not just the coaching staff, but our support staff. I mean, there's going to be a lot of different wrinkles thrown into this whole thing with the pandemic of COVID-19 that, we've got a good handle on so far. I feel confident in our group, and I'm just excited to get that season going once I get back from the World Juniors.
Mitch Love is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Mitch is an assistant coach on the upcoming Team Canada entry in the World Junior Hockey Championships. Mitch, it's about 9 days, 10 days away from the start of the selection camp in Red Deer. And, of course, it's going to be an extended camp, almost a month long, before the team is officially picked and then the tournament begins, of course. How do you handle a month-long camp of this nature when you're both trying to evaluate players and get players sort of up to speed that haven't really been on the ice in competitive situations for months on end? How do you sort of space that out over the course of the next month?
Well, I think again, we put a lot of preparation into this via our staff meetings on Zoom over the last 4 or 5 months, and we've talked to people that, were part of the NHL bubble and what did that look like? I mean, obviously there's some differences there between, junior age kids and pros. But we feel like we're in a good place with where we're at and what we need to do to keep these kids busy, get them back in that competitive nature. This camp is unprecedented in terms of what it normally looked like for a World Junior event. It's what I compare it to is it's a little similar to the Ivan Hlinka Gretzky Cup process, which, you know, is usually held in the summertime right before the tournament, where there's about 40-something players and they're competing against each other for an opportunity to play on Team Canada. So it's very similar to that process. You know, every single coaching staff member has been part of the Hlinka process, so we feel like we've got an advantage there on how we should run our camp. And then, you know, we're meeting with the players next week in a mini virtual camp just to kind of catch them up to speed on some of the things we talked about in our summer showcase virtual camp, just to try to stimulate the brains again on hockey and what we're looking for and how that evaluation process is going to go. And it's going to go quick. I mean, you know, we got three inter-squad games once we get into Red Deer and you know, these kids are, they're vying for a spot to represent their country, you know, during the biggest event of the year for junior hockey. And I think kids will be ready to go. I think they're itching to go. They can't wait to be around each other again. And I know the staff is looking forward to being around the kids as well.
Mitch, you just mentioned the inter-squad games that are coming up at selection camp. And I believe I read that there's also going to be six games against a team of U Sports All-Stars. How important was it for Hockey Canada management and staff involved with the junior team to have that many games, considering that, you know, some of the teams overseas, they've had the luxury of having, you know, games at the international level?
Well, I think it's imperative. You know, I think these kids are sick of doing, you know, skills sessions and playing 3-on-3 or 4-on-4 in whatever, you know, province or jurisdiction they're in right now. So it was imperative. And guys, like, Hockey Canada has gone above and beyond to put this event on. I mean, I don't have the dollars and cents figures in front of me. It's not my job. It's above my pay grade. But the commitment level that they've put on, along with the sponsors that put this event on for Hockey Canada, is phenomenal. The testing protocols that will go in place into this to protect the players and the staff is first class. This is a major undertaking during this time. And you know what? These kids they'll be ready. I believe our guys. I know people want to sit there and say, well, you know, guys haven't played and other countries are doing it. When push comes to shove, when you put that crest on yourself there, the juices flow. And these kids will be ready to go. They'll be competitive. They'll be itching to get out there and play against each other. And it's an exciting time.
You know, Mitch, it's never easy to follow in your brother's footsteps, especially on the same team. But what's it like having Colton Dock on the team? And obviously he's a different type of player than his brother, but is it difficult for him, or does he have his own voice and doesn't have to worry about trying to live up to his brother's, you know, what his brother was able to do with you guys?
Yeah, I think that's important. Not everybody can be a third overall NHL draft pick and play in the NHL at 18. I think the last player to play in the NHL at 18 from the Western Hockey League was Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. So that's telling you how rare it is. I think it'll be important for Colton as he goes through the process here in his draft year that, you know, just play your own game. Be yourself, you know. Colton's a good hockey player. He can make plays. He has a really strong second half for us last year as a 16-year-old. He'll be given a lot of opportunity here with our team in many different situations. And you know, it's about earning those, or it's about executing those, you know, those opportunities. And Colton's had a great summer. From all my reports, I know our assistant coach, Ryan Marsh, has been on the ice with him quite often, with him and Kirby and some other players in the Edmonton area. And he's growing, he's stronger, he's worked on his shot, he's worked on his skating. We're expecting big things from Colton, and he's a great kid. He wants to be a hockey player. He's around that family. That Dock family is a hockey family, and we're excited to watch his development as he goes through the Blades program.
Mitch Love is the head coach of the Saskatoon Blades of the Western Hockey League. He's an assistant coach at Canada's upcoming entry into the World Junior Hockey Championships, getting started in Edmonton in about 7 or so weeks' time. Mitch, appreciate your time, appreciate your insight. Best of luck at the upcoming World Juniors, and thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thanks again for having me on, guys, and you guys stay safe, you and your families out there in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Likewise, Mitch, all
the
best to you, and thanks for joining us. When we come back, we're going to talk about the NBA's decision and to publicize and come forward and present their plan for the upcoming season, and why the NHL not only hasn't followed suit, but hasn't seemed to really get started on that front. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You don't have to wait much longer, as the week of Christmas has got a little brighter, with the NBA set to tip off December 22nd. Now, you may be thinking to yourself, 72 games between late December to the Olympics in mid-July is a condensed timeline. And you would be right. But as we all know, money matters.
A condensed timeline indeed, but at least the NBA has a timeline. That's something that the NHL might want to get working on one of these hours. I'm not sure. They seem to be taking their sweet time. But the NBA is going to be back in business starting December 22nd, which means Christmas Day, which is always that big day of basketball action, will take place as per usual. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290, this segment of the program brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. Of course, Rumors is currently closed due to the provincial guidelines, but we do encourage you, like we encourage you, to help support every small business in Winnipeg, you know, restaurants, anything that's being forced to maybe go through some hard times to bear the brunt of the responsibility, fairly or unfairly. We'll leave that side alone. Regarding the current pandemic, you know, go out, do what you can. No shows right now at Rumors, but buy a gift card. Maybe you need to, you know, stocking stuffer it up, which, you know, Christmas is upcoming, the holiday season, Hanukkah upcoming in the next month or 2 months or so.
Yeah, I've got nothing in my stocking, Drew.
Well, there you go. You don't even have a stocking. So maybe buy Ezzy a stocking and then put some Rumors gift cards into it. It's all available, rumorscomedyclub.com. Go out, do your part. I know I'm a bit of a broken record here, but c'est la vie. I can't stress it enough that we need to do our part in keeping these small businesses
afloat. Drew, I didn't
realize
you were such a vinyl enthusiast with all these broken record references.
Yeah, you know,
just be more careful with your records.
Well, you know, coming from the guy who poured a coffee on his computer a couple hours ago, I'll really take that under advisement. But you know, thank you for your sage advice there, oh sensei of mine.
Yeah, I'm pretty sage.
You are pretty sage. Of course, in case you're just joining us, just turning on the radio, Joe Biden has been elected president-elect for the United States of America.
You broke that news, Drew.
I did. I did not expect that at any point in my life I would be on air and break the news of a new president. Yeah. But 2020 has thrown us for a lot of curves. If you're just joining us, Joe Biden, president-elect in the United States. And here's something for symmetry. 48 years ago, November 7th, 1972, that was when Joe Biden was first elected to the United States Senate as the youngest senator.
Wow.
One of the youngest senators ever elected. And now today he's going to be, he's been declared the president-elect, going to be the oldest president ever elected. So if you're into numerology, if you're into that sort of thing, there's something about November 7th the calendar.
You probably cast a vote for him 48 years ago, didn't you?
Well, yeah, of course I did. That's, you know.
And you would have been, like 30 at the time?
That's right. You know, I voted for him after I lost in the primary to him in that first election, you know, because I'm approaching my seventh or eighth decade right now based on that joke.
And guys, some more numerology. Joe Biden, of course, is going to be the 46th president of the United States. Drew, of course, is the 46th best host on TSN 1290. So a little symmetry there as well.
Thank you for that. Let's talk about the NBA's announcement. Like I said, 72 game season starting, just before Christmas. The NHL, again, we expected that there was going to be a meeting this week. That's what we had reported last week.
Yeah.
Doesn't appear to have been a meeting between the NHL and the NHLPA and the Return to Play Committee. Not to say
but one thing though, that's an important distinction, Drew, because the NHL and the NHLPA, you know, it's been reported that they have been talking
at the highest levels, but not the players.
The Return to Play Committee.
Right.
So you got to think some of the players have been involved. It's not just Don Fear, and you know, it's not just, you know, the higher ups. You have to think that, you know, some of these NHL players have been involved in. But you're making a good point. The NHLPA Return to Play Committee, which Mark Scheifele was part of that,
and it's only growing. The Return to Play Committee for the regular season is apparently going to be something like 15 players or something.
Well, the point is, it doesn't look like, you know, the NHL season is going to start in early January, right? Like, it's looking more and more likely it's going to be mid-January, you know, it might even be February, right, guys? Like, there's so many issues, and, you know, when this came out, I thought it was interesting because nothing was mentioned when the NBA announced that the season start date, nothing was mentioned about fans in the stands. To the best of the NBA,
can I make an observation, to the best of my knowledge,
yeah. Isn't that a pretty big thing here?
Yeah, but there's only one difference.
The NBA.
Look at the NBA's TV contract and look at the NHL's. Yeah, because the NBA, I mean, the whole point is
Donald Trump would say, it's huge.
That's not untrue. And so the reality is, the NBA can afford, don't get me wrong, they don't want to. The fans put money in the bank for the ownership. But the TV deal puts a whole lot of money into the bank.
Yes.
So the reality is, you can afford to start. And again, you got to remember, I mean, it's the United States. It's a lot different. We don't know what it's going to be like, you know, going forward with Joe Biden as president in terms of, like, what they're allowing. But again, that's a lot of states' issues. In terms of allowing
fans. Did you
get
a vote, by the way, in Michigan?
I did not. But the point is that even, you know.
You got a vote in Kentucky, though.
But the point is that even if they're allowed to have some fans, we don't know what the numbers are going to look like, right, for NBA arenas.
Right.
Even though a lot of NHL and NBA arenas are, you know,
they share.
Overlap.
You have to think there's going to be very limited capacity.
Very limited.
The
But the point is that NHL cannot afford from a monetary perspective to have a very limited capacity like they did last year. So the reality is the NBA can afford to say, listen, we're going to start on December 22nd because we know that even if we can't have fans in the stands for the first month or 2 months, our TV contract will be sufficient to pay itself. The NHL, again, I'm not suggesting, I haven't crunched the numbers, but I don't know that they would have that same latitude.
They wouldn't. That's why I'm suspicious. So,
but I'm just saying that's why I'm not surprised that the NBA has already come up with a plan and has it set. The NHL has to say, listen, we need to be able to, I mean, don't get me wrong. They have guys who are looking at the numbers and they're saying, what is it going to look like if we have, you know, 10% capacity in these buildings, 25% capacity? What are our numbers? Because again, we talked about it last week. If you're in a business, like these owners aren't in a business to lose money. So yes, they're stewards of something that's bigger than them. The hockey is a business. Yes, everybody acknowledges that. But it's also more than just a business. It's people's passions. It's people's lives. So it's not just like a McDonald's or some other, business, some commercial venture. It's got more than that. But at the same time, these owners aren't in it to lose hundreds of millions of dollars a season, and so they have to be pragmatic.
Well, you're right. And I think another thing that needs to be brought up here, guys, is that all of these teams, you know, that were in the bubble, especially the teams that went far, and, you know, we got to give a shout out to Greg Wyshynski and Emily Kaplan of ESPN. They came out with an article earlier this week, and they did a great job, and they quoted, or at least referenced, Stars owner Tom Gilardi saying, like, we went all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. They didn't make any money off of that. So he's been one of the owners that's been pretty vocal that he wants to begin sooner rather than later. And I think, like, first off, right now we can put, you know, this nonsense to bed that there's not going to be any season. I mean, I think we all agree there's going to be a season, right? At least I do. I think you have to have a season, especially considering that, you know, you had that layoff in, you know, April, May, June, July, right, guys? So, I mean, even though, you know, I think on Pardon the Interruption, they kind of raised a bit of a stir there, you know, when they were talking about, you know, some of the owners in the NHL not wanting to have a season at all. But I think, you know, you look back to, you know, 2012, 2013, when you lost half of a season, I definitely would imagine most owners in the NHL don't want to go down that road. But, you know, Dave mentions the, you know, the owners losing money. I think it's a guarantee that the season will not start with a lot of fans in the stands.
Well, they can't. I mean,
that's why there's probably going to be a Canadian bubble. There's probably going to be, you know, instead of one big bubble, it's going to be four bubbles. But, you know, because the NHLPA return to play committee hasn't even met yet formally, it's looking less and less likely, you know, that it's going to be early January, and, you know, we might have to wait 3 months, and it might be February.
Before we go to break, I want to read the following tweet that just came out from Winnipeg Jets captain Blake Wheeler. It's not hockey-related, believe it or not. It's about the election. I hope this is from Blake Wheeler's verified Twitter account. I hope Joe Biden doesn't forget who voted him into the White House. I also hope he can speak for the Americans that didn't vote for him. I hope we can start celebrating the good in each other and stop fighting about our differences. My daughter gets to see a woman as Vice President of the United States of America. For the first time in a while, I'm hopeful. That last line, I think a lot of people are probably feeling the same on this Saturday morning. Joe Biden It's been declared by all the major networks and the major news gathering sources. It's not fake news. Joe Biden is the president-elect of the United States of America.
Yeah, well said by the captain there.
Very well said. When we come back, Aaron Portsline of The Athletic is going to join us for an update on the Columbus Blue Jackets offseason. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg, alongside Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can send us text messages, pro or con. We allow them both. You can do that to 1290.90, where standard messaging rates will apply. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio. That's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From theathletic.com, he covers the Columbus Blue Jackets. He's a good friend of this program. Aaron Portsline joins us on the line. Aaron, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Doing very well, guys. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Aaron. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Blue Jackets and their offseason, and I guess their offseason certainly is not complete because of the continued RFA status of Pierre-Luc Dubois. So I guess we start with Mr. Dubois, obviously on the cusp of superstardom in the NHL if he's not already there. You know, what's the sort of latest, if there is a latest, on the contract negotiations, and how do you see this playing itself out over the coming days, weeks, even months, if it goes that long?
Yeah, well, wait a minute. I thought we were on here to talk about politics today. And
yeah, what's happening in Ohio there?
What's the scene in Columbus?
Pierre-Luc is, you know what? They've been in this spot so many times with their RFAs coming out of entry-level deals. The sense that I get, and either Dubois' agent, Pat Brisson, or Blue Jackets GM, Jarmo Kekalainen, neither one of them likes to negotiate in the press, as they would say. So the updates are sort of few and far between, if any. But I get the sense that it's parked, that it's just sort of sitting there, which so often happens when you get past that initial rush of, okay, you're now an RFA, and you exchange and nothing catches the other side's eye. So many times it needs a deadline in order to get pushed along. I mean, we've seen Ryan Johansson sign a couple of days before training camp back in 2014. Saw Josh Anderson do the same thing before training camp in 2016 or perhaps 17. They've been down this road before. One of the tricky elements to this is nobody knows what that deadline is. So often it's camp, right? So often it's the start of the season. So guys have missed camp. Used to trying to create leverage to get a better deal for themselves. No one knows when the season's going to start, so I don't sense, frankly, a lot of urgency on either side. If I sense anything, it's impatience among the fan base that here the Blue Jackets go again, and what is the relationship going to be like between this player and this team, even if they do hash something out? Are they taking a risk of fracturing a relationship again, as they've done before?
No, Aaron, yesterday I saw the Columbus Blue Jackets on their official Twitter account posted a picture of Max Domi in his Blue Jackets gear. I'm sure you saw that picture.
Yep.
As well. And I got to admit, he looked really good in that gear, and he looked like a, you know, perfect fit. He looks like he's been a Blue Jacket for a long time. But, you know, in all seriousness, the question, though, you know, is Domi a guy that just seems like a perfect John Tortorella player? And the second part of that question is, do you think for sure he's going to be a center? Because in Montreal, you know, we saw him flip-flop between being a center and a wing there.
Yeah, I think for sure he's going to be a center here. That's why he was acquired. They have a desperate need. They had a desperate need down the middle for center help. That's how they view him. His arrival will allow Boone Jenner to move to the left side, which is where Jenner, where he can just sort of strap his ears back and forecheck like a maniac, which is really his strength. That's where a lot of his offense comes from. So this should bring a lot of offensive life to, they really haven't had a second line. It may help them in a couple of different ways. I think Domi's attitude, he's not Ty Domi, and that's sad for all of us who have gone back a long way watching hockey, because I would have loved to have covered that maniac. But he is he's a passionate firebrand hockey player, and I know John Tortorella is going to love that. The one thing that I think Domi is going to have to clean up, two things actually, to be fully in John Tortorella's good graces, is the penalties, reaction penalties, retribution penalties, and his play in the defensive zone, which I've heard, and I'm reserving judgment here because I've not seen him play sustained hockey before, but that is a soft spot in his game, that he's not a defensive whiz. But the one thing about John Tortorella we know is, if you tell him he's not going to like somebody, or if there's a question if they're going to get along, what usually ends up happening is he loves that guy, just to defy you and other experts out there. So you keep an eye on that relationship. It will be interesting. But I can tell you they're thrilled to have Max Domi, and they're thrilled to have him at center.
Aaron Portsline is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Aaron covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for TheAthletic.com.
Now, Aaron, I saw last month the Blue Jackets introduced their 20th season logo, and that obviously, you know, represents the fact that they've been 20 years in Columbus. And, you know, I just want to ask you about the impact that organization has had in the community and you know, just getting younger hockey players into it. So if you reflect, you've been covering them for all that time. What does it mean to you to have the Columbus Blue Jackets? What does that mean to the community in Columbus?
Well, I mean, this is one of my favorite topics, and I can go on and on and on about this. If you think back to that first season, it was the people who are Major League Soccer fans, I don't mean this to offend them, because the crew was here before the Blue Jackets were, and it was Major League Soccer. But I don't think people viewed Major League Soccer then as they do now. And so the Blue Jackets coming to Columbus, for the city of Columbus, it was the first step into Major League sports. And Columbus is a city, and a lot of people don't know this, city population-wise, Columbus is bigger than Cleveland and Cincinnati combined by 250,000 people. Like, it dwarfs those other two cities that everybody knows about. It dwarfs the other two cities that have had pro sports for a long time. Bengals and Reds in Cincinnati, Cavs, Browns, Indians up in Cleveland. And Columbus has always been Ohio State football and only that. So they really put Columbus on a different map, where now they're playing Montreal, Los Angeles, Toronto, Vancouver. They're not playing teams in West Lafayette, Indiana, and Evanston, Illinois. They're now at a different level of sports. So there's that. But the grassroots level of hockey involvement here, when you think of the first round draft pick from Pittsburgh was R.J. Umberger. Right, almost 40 years after the Penguins came to town. And Columbus has had Connor Murphy, Jack Roslovic, some very impactful NHL players have come out of here. And there's still more coming. There's still more emerging. So it's a success story. There's like 200-plus adult league teams in Columbus when the pandemic isn't ruining everything. It is a hockey community by almost any measure now, and that's incredible work to have achieved in just two decades.
Aaron Portsline, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know, Aaron, you mentioned, you know, Columbus being a hockey community, and we were talking last segment about, of course, the NHL is such a gate-driven league, and the lack of fans that are going to be able to be in attendance, certainly at least at the start, whenever the start is going to be. It's hard to believe there's going to be any significant numbers in attendance. You know, how much do you think that's factoring in to, say, some of the decision-making and the thought processes, not necessarily of strictly Columbus's ownership group, but the ownership groups throughout the NHL as we try and figure out what a restart of the next season is going to look like?
Well, I think this is where the disparity of market sizes, which the salary cap has tried to eliminate or at least help. I think this is where market size comes back into it in a way that nobody can avoid. And again, not speaking, as you said, not speaking specifically about Columbus, are there franchises in this league that would probably lose less money if they didn't play? I think there probably are. I have to say, just from talking to players these last few weeks, the one word that started to come into conversation, and nobody wants to extrapolate and go deeper into it, but for a while guys would say, who knows when the season's going to start, or who knows what, you know, is going to be the start of training camp. What I'm starting to hear now is guys say, who knows when or if the season is going to start. And the league hasn't broached that, but I'm telling you, when you get to, now we're saying in some cases likely a February start, right? If that doesn't swing, maybe you're looking at March. And at some point, if you're starting in February or March, how much of a season can you have that's A, not shorter than your playoffs, because that would be ridiculous, but also are you now affecting next season as well? One thing I think can help, obviously a huge help would be the vaccine, if we can get a vaccine or if we can get some sort of treatment, which has been talked about. I think this country, my country, having a federal approach to this rather than just turning it over to the state to let them fight it off. I don't think that's a political statement. I think that's just common sense. That can help, but it's getting really bad here again. Over 100,000 cases a day now in the U.S., and a lot of people think that could double in the next couple of weeks. So, that word "if" now is starting to become louder to me. It's starting to carry more weight whenever anybody says it.
And obviously, you know, we hope that, you know, that trend starts to reverse and the cases go down, Aaron, not just in the U.S. and Canada, but everywhere. And, you know, final question for you here. I know for The Athletic, you've been, covering the Vladislav Gavrikov contract. And, you know, Gavrikov is obviously a guy that's not as well known across the NHL. He's definitely well known in your neck of the woods. But with Zach Werenski and Seth Jones, you know, two of the best defensemen in the entire league getting all of the headlines, you know, Gavrikov's coming off of a very impressive rookie year, you know, a late round draft pick by the Blue Jackets, who played in the Continental Hockey League for very many years. But the question I have for you, do you think outside of Columbus people know how good he is? Because when I've watched Gavrikov play left side defenseman there for the Blue Jackets, I mean, Columbus has a real good one there, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And this is the reason that Jarmo Kekalainen wanted him over here a couple years earlier, because they looked at him right away as an NHL defenseman. He plays a physical brand of hockey, but he still is able to keep up with his feet, with his hands, and with this sort of mental hockey processor, if you will. Funny story, they had him here, it's now 3 years ago, but 2 years ago before he signed, they had him here to tour the city, show him the arena, have him look at houses, this is what your new life could be like. And literally, while they're having dinner, the KHL announces that they've signed Gavrikov to another 2 year contract. To which John Tortorella sees this news, and they've said, you know, John, don't say anything out of line. Just breathe. There's no reason to confront it now. And that lasted up about a minute, and Torts breaks in with us. What the hell are you thinking? Why are we here? Why are we here if you signed a contract? So they laugh about it now. They've known this guy for a long time. They've felt like he's an NHL guy for a long time. But he came in and he stepped right in last season, top four role with David Savard, perfect complement with David Savard. We say that about a lot of players. At some point, we should probably give David Savard more credit for that. But their top four, they think, is among the best in the league, and Gavrikov's a big part of that.
Aaron Portsline covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for The Athletic. Aaron, we'll let you go. You know, if you want to go celebrate, no one will complain about that. Have some Jenny's ice cream on my behalf, and have a great rest of your weekend, Aaron.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. Have a great day. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Aaron. Take care. Yeah, take care. When we come back, one final segment, look around some of the signings throughout the course of the week. That Jenny's ice cream, by the way, guys, that's some good ice cream, let me tell you. If you ever get an opportunity to head up near Columbus area, Jenny's Ice Cream. That's where it's at.
Well, you obviously know, Drew, that if I'm ever in Columbus, I'll be eating a tub of that stuff. But
yeah.
Columbus has always been a city that I've been, you know, interested to visit.
Which
you
is interesting because they actually have a policy. They have a policy of no Ginsburgs.
That's, you know, that's actually
no, except John. John's
I thought alone. You were going to say that the people in Columbus were hoping I never visit.
Yeah, that's basically
right.
what I said.
That's basically the one area the United States can unify around is a no Ezzy policy. Yeah.
No, but honestly, I mean, you know, Aaron, you know, we were talking about this right before Aaron came on. We've been having him on, you know, since the 92.9 Kick FM days. And Aaron Portzine, as far as I'm concerned, I tell this to everybody, one of the best beat reporters, you know, in the entire league. You know, he knows the Blue Jackets better than anybody, and that's why we have him on the show all the time. But, you know, Columbus is a city that they have been waiting years, Dave, you know this, for a winner, and they haven't had the results. They obviously don't have a Stanley Cup, but, you know, slowly there with Jarmo Kekäläinen and John Tortorella, that year after year they've just continued to get better. They've lost a lot of players, but I still think this will be a playoff team next year.
When we come back, one final segment, we'll look around at some signings throughout the league. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Fresh off a new four-year deal with the Detroit Red Wings. Congratulations, first and foremost, Anthony. What is it about the Red Wings that made you just want to stick around for, you know, pretty midterm?
I think it's the arrival of Steve Yzerman.
Nice.
I mean, we saw what he did in Tampa, and I'm just hoping he can do the same thing over here.
No pressure, Steve Yzerman. That's Anthony Mantha signing a new contract with the with the Red Wings, a contract extension, a guy committing. And it goes to show you just the power of Stevie Y and the gravitas that he brings to any organization. You know, had such great success with the Tampa Bay Lightning. Won't win a Stanley Cup there, you know, necessarily specifically, but his fingerprints are all over that success. And, of course, then now he's back in Detroit trying to bring the Red Wings back to some glory days that have been long gone there, given their struggles as of late. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment this Saturday morning. We open with a look at the Bodog.net scoreboard. Not a ton of sports happening right now. It's going to be a big day in college football that's underway all over your local TSN channels, but there's only one scoreboard that matters at the moment, and that is number 273. That is the number of electoral college votes Joe Biden has now been estimated and projected to win. He's been declared the president-elect of the United States of America. He will speak to the nation and really to the world later tonight at 7 p.m. Central Time. So Joe Biden, the new president of the United States, that is the main look of the scoreboard on this Saturday morning. Brought to you by Bodog.net. Head to Bodog for sports odds, poker strategy, and free-to-play casino games. Bodog.net. Make a play. You know, it's funny. Speaking of Bodog here and speaking about the election, there was a ton of money to be made on Tuesday night as the election results were coming in. I know you guys, this might be more up my alley than it is necessarily yours.
Why didn't you tell us that on Tuesday? I would have put some shekels down.
Well, so there was, as the...
I saw the numbers.
As the initial wave of votes was coming in. So before the polls closed on Tuesday night, Biden was a favorite, I think minus 175, maybe minus 225, which means if you're not a gambler out there, you have to wager $225 to win $100. Yeah. By, you know, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock on Tuesday, as the votes were coming in, and they were certainly looking, you know, more in favor of President Trump, current President Trump, Joe Biden's numbers were up to plus 485, plus 400, meaning you wager $100, you could win $400. So anybody who was monitoring the betting markets closely on Tuesday night, yes, thank you, David, anybody who was monitoring the betting markets closely on Tuesday night could have made a lot of money, you know, if they chose to, you know, follow the prognostications and put some money on Joe Biden.
Drew, who are you, Nate Silver?
I'm not Nate Silver, but there was a lot of money to be made. I know Huss, our buddy, you know, when we, of course, wish him back to full health sooner, as soon as possible, he definitely probably was monitoring that along with me and some other people that I know. Quick look at some of the contracts. Mackenzie Weegar, that's the guy who I wanted to start with.
Yeah, well, and you know, we can throw in Anthony Mantha there.
Sure.
I know we're right up against the clock here, end of the show, but I love that contract by Anthony Mantha. I think you could argue that, you know, Mantha might make... might deserve a little bit more money, but Mantha actually, you know, on a point per game basis, had his best year last year with the Wings. He missed some time due to injury, but, you know, love that signing by
Low
the Red
Sun.
Wings. Yeah, and I just love I just love, you know, that's funny. I love where the Red Wings are going there. Love bringing in Mark Stahl there and not giving up a lot to get him, just to kind of insulate some of the younger defensemen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a guy like Lucas Raymond, he's going to be a really good NHLer. And, you know, Moritz Seider might be a few years away. But I just love the direction the Red Wings are going. But, yeah, Mackenzie Weegar, you know, if you follow Jay Fresh Hockey on Twitter, you know, he always produces those viz and those analytics. Mackenzie Weegar, a very underrated defenseman for Florida. So, you know, they got him for, you know, I think just over $3 million a year.
3.25 for the next 3 years. So, and that's a guy who's, of course, been, you know, sort of linked to the Winnipeg Jets as a possible maybe return for Jack Ross.
He's a really good defenseman, underrated, so that was a really nice contract for him as well.
That's it for the Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. In case you missed any of the program, it'll be available on our website, illegalcurve.com. It's on tsn1290.ca. It's wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us, let us know what you think of the program. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses. Support as many small businesses as you can. They need your help right now in the face of the pandemic. Big thanks to producer Sean back at the studio. For Ezra Ginsberg, for Dave Manuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.